Hello and welcome to Games with Garfield. I'm your host Jessica Price and I'm here with Scaff Elias.
Hello.
And Richard Garfield.
Hola.
We have a very exciting podcast for you tonight. We're going to talk to a guy named Casey Muratori, and a little bit later we'll talk about a Spectromancer expansion. So Casey, why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm Casey Muratori, and by day I am a game programmer. I work at Rad Game Tools on game technology.
And is it true that they're behind the video in every game?
I don't know if it's every game, but it's very close to every game. I guess I'm not sure how many games ship a year without their video stuff in it, but it's a lot. I don't know if that's because nobody else wants to do it, or if that's just because ours is good. I have no idea. But yeah, by night I'm actually working for Penny Arcade to do a little bit of planning on PAX Dev, which is the thing that I was going to talk about here.
So. What is PAX Dev?
PAX Dev is a two-day extension to PAX, basically. It's going to be the 2 days before PAX. And although they're kind of adjacent in time, they're separate events. So the main PAX Prime, which happens, I guess, at the end of August, beginning of September, traditionally, is sort of the gaming event. And then there's going to be a developer-centric event that's only for game developers. That'll be the 2 days before it.
Oh, so like GDC was back when it was cool.
Yes. Well, hopefully. That's the goal. It's and it's going to be game development centric, so it's not really going to have biz dev stuff or production, that sort of stuff. It's going to be strictly about developing games. But one of the reasons I decided to talk to you guys about it was because it's also going to have a big tabletop design and art component to it. And so we've been trying to sort of get opinions and ideas from people about what would be good to have. One of the things we want to do with the conference is make it more sort of more like going to work at a game company with interesting people, brainstorming around a whiteboard, coming up with interesting solutions to problems, learning how other people do things, and you know, improving how you do things based on that. And so we're trying not to have it be just people lecturing to an audience the entire time.
So it prompted the decision to, I mean, PAX has always been very fan-centered. What prompted the decision to do a developer-only component?
Developers, actually. A lot of developers just wanted to have a developer event that they could have, because PAX is very large,
right,
and it's full of gaming stuff, and there's really not much you can do in terms of having developer things there. Because, I mean, that just, it's already filled to capacity. There's nothing, you know, they're out of space already.
Oh, yeah, I know. I used to go there a day of and pick up a badge, and last year a couple of my colleagues were giving a panel, and so I told them I'd come, and I show up, and I'm like, okay, where do I buy my pass? And they're like,
nope.
You didn't get it on the internet beforehand?
Yeah.
You know, we're sold out.
We should probably interject to hear exactly what PAX is. There's probably a number of people in our audience who don't recognize it. It's a pretty exciting local show that's become quite big over the last few years, and one of the reasons it's so exciting is because it, I mean, it has a huge video game presence, but it also has a reasonable paper game presence, and so this extension into focusing on game development is and incorporating both paper and computer games is pretty original.
Yeah, the name PAX stands for Penny Arcade Expo, and the name actually comes from, there was a game focused comic strip on the web called Penny Arcade, and the community grew up around it and eventually got to the point where they were able to do their own convention, which has, I think since E3 became, you know, much more industry focused, has become the biggest gaming convention open to fans in the country. So it's really grown up very quickly. So how did you get involved with putting together this developer conference?
Well, I've been friends with some of the people at Penny Arcade for a long time. And so really, I just kind of came on to get things started a little bit. They obviously are not developers. Penny Arcade, you know, they run a comic and they run a convention. So developers were asking for a development conference, but of course they need some developers on board to kind of get things started. I think once it's established what PAX Dev is, how it works, and so on, then it can be very, you know, community run, kind of like PAX is now. But at least at the outset, it's just kind of helpful to have some developers who, you know, they know and can work with to just kind of get some stuff. So I was just kind of volunteering to be like, I'll go talk to some people. And mostly what I've been doing is I've been trying to talk to developers in the industry about what would be cool new ideas. Like, what could we do at this conference that's different from what's been done at conferences before? You know, what gets you excited to go to a conference again? A lot of people don't really like going to development conferences anymore. Why is that? What would change your mind? You know, what would get you interested in it? And so that was kind of one of the things that I want to talk to you guys about too. Tabletop wise, it's like, you know, are there good tabletop conferences now? What would make you excited about going to a conference? What would your ideal conference look like? Who would be there? What would you be doing? You know, because that's all the stuff that we can then take and make sure that PaxDev has that. So, you know, and so far I found that game developers, since they always tend to be very creative people, have just had lots of great ideas. And so I think there's going to be some pretty interesting things.
Can you talk about any of the cool things that you're going to be doing, or is it all embargoed?
One of the things that I'm most excited about is what we're going to try and do is every year there's a PAX 10 thing that they do at Penny Arcade. And what that is people in the independent game community, they can submit their games to Penny Arcade. And Penny Arcade gets together, I think about like 50 industry people or so. They play through all the games, and they pick the top 10 out of all the submissions for exhibition at PAX. Meaning you just get a free, you know, you can show your game to the public for free, which is huge because, you know, normally publishers have to pay a lot of money to be on the show floor, do whatever. You know, I don't even know how that stuff works. Yeah. But point being, that's a fairly big deal.
Yeah, Richard and I actually had a game in the PAX 10 a couple years ago.
Awesome.
Oh, what game?
Which game?
Schizoid.
Oh, okay. I didn't know you guys worked on Schizoid.
Yeah. We designed it along with Torpex Games.
Torpex. Awesome. Well, yeah. So, okay. So you guys are intimately familiar with this process.
Yep. Oh.
Yes. Intimately.
Pseudo-intimately familiar. Somewhat. Okay. So what we're going to do, or rather what we've planned to do so far, is we're going to take the submissions for that, and for people who don't make the PAX 10, if you would like, we are going to take, say, the next 10 games or the next 5 games in there. And we're going to take those, and we're going to have top designers from the video game industry basically take those as a starting point. And one of our sessions is probably going to be a 2-hour block of them working together to figure out what isn't working in this game and what are the things that they could do to fix it and to improve it, right? So we can basically watch how different top designers from different studios analyze a gameplay situation, how they think about what's happening in there, what's going wrong, what's going right, how they brainstorm ideas themselves and with each other about how to fix it, and then see kind of that whole result play out, you know, in front of an audience.
That's pretty cool.
So I'm kind of excited about that because that hits on all of the kind of things that I think would be cool about having a different style conference, which is getting at those things that you can't see in a lecture format, right? It's very hard to get that stuff to come across in a lecture format, no matter how good the presenter is. It's that ability to see them really doing what they really do best and how they do it. And furthermore, the cross-pollination of different designers, seeing how they work, seeing how they can play off each other and so on. I'm really excited about it. So again, who knows? All of these things are experimental. Maybe, you know, it'll turn out to be terrible. I have no idea. But I'm really excited about that one. I think it has a lot of potential. So that's the kind of thing that we're looking for.
Very cool. So why the decision to exclude production?
That's...
Because it's boring?
So first I will say I take a lot of personal blame for that. So any people who are production-oriented and who are disappointed that there's not going to be production at this PAX Dev, more than likely, that's probably largely my fault. Production is, it encompasses a lot of things, but some examples of it would be like scheduling. How do you manage the art staff? How do you figure out your content management system? All of the things that are involved in actually getting a game done that are not specifically making a piece of the game would typically fall into production, up until the part where you start getting into business, which is like we're negotiating the contracts. That's not considered production. So it's a very wide swath on a modern game, if it's a AAA game, you're talking about a very large swath of potential work there. Producers and associate producers, people who are working on like tool systems even to some degree, like there might be entire database management teams or something doing stuff like that, that would technically be considered production.
Oh yeah, because just speaking as somebody who works in a major game developer and does not particularly enjoy production and yet continually ends up having to do a lot of it, better ways to do that, you know, ways to get it out of the way efficiently would seem to me to be something that I would think most developers would be really interested in.
And I totally agree with that. And so, like I said, since I take some responsibility for that, I'll take the blame for that. I'll give the explanation of why I was pushing for that.
It's not fun. I get that. But as far as, you know, what's useful.
So the reason for that was, personally, I feel that where you draw the line of what you cover at a conference has less to do with whether or not that content is valuable to discuss versus what the focus and mental space of the attendees will be when they are there. And so my feeling on it was not that biz dev or press or production or any of those things are not important. They are becoming increasingly important every day for every game. So there's no question about that. My feeling on it is more that there needed to be a conference where from the time that people walk in the door, they are thinking solely about just the game. And to do that, you have to sacrifice, I think, several totally valid topics for game development in order to keep that mental space of like, we're not going to worry about how much it costs to make this game. We're not going to worry about where we're going to get that money. We're not going to worry about how to get everyone on the same page. We're not going to worry about diversity issues in the workplace. All of those things that could totally be make or break your game, we're just not going to think about them at this conference. And so that's part of the reason why it's got the narrow focus that it does, is to see, at least for this first year, what happens if we keep it very tightly focused to we are making just the game today and let other conferences, because there are a lot of other development conferences, keep sort of the wider net, because you know there are plenty of places to go to talk about production, and I think that's good. Does that answer the question?
That itself sounds like a fresh approach, which is going to have a lot of appeal, I think.
Okay, so are the results of PAX Dev, do you think, going to inform or affect the panels in PAX Prime that are about game development?
Oh, will, yeah. Are you moving some of the panels
away? Will there be any cross-pollination? Will there be any?
So, I really can't speak to that with any real authority, I'm afraid. I'm just not that involved in the PAX Prime stuff. Largely because, like, I work on a volunteer basis for them, so I only have so much time to really, like, spend on getting to know the whole pipeline.
So if they paid you, you'd do a better job than you're doing now?
No. Yeah, so, I gave them as much time as I could. They're very nice to me. I just simply don't have the ability to take an actual job there, right? That's not something I can fit into my schedule.
But it seems like it would be really cool if you're getting all of these, you know, AAA game designers together anyway. It seems like it would be cool to do a panel at PAX Prime for, you know, the people who want to get into development, people who may want to design their own games, sort of being the what we learned from PAX Dev.
I totally agree, and at least personally, my hope is that if anything, having PAX Dev right before PAX Prime is going to lead to even more developers being at PAX. I know that a lot of developers do go to PAX now. Some of them participate. And so I'm hoping that this gives even more of an excuse for them to go, because now it's like I can book one plane ticket, one hotel room, and I can go to both PAX Dev, where I talk to all my developer, you know, friends and work on development stuff, and then I can stay for PAX Prime and be a part of the fan community and interact with them and everything. So, I don't know. My experiences at PAX Prime has always been great. I love the show. Couldn't recommend it highly enough. So, my hope is that that happens. But that said, I'm not involved with that at all, so I really don't know what'll be happening there. I do suspect that if there are submissions, because PAX Dev does have an open submission process in addition to like curated content, I suspect that if there are submissions which really aren't that appropriate for PAX Dev, but that sound like good stuff from game developers, I'd be really surprised if the suggestion wasn't, hey, let's do this as a PAX panel. It's the natural thing to do. Yeah.
Is there anything besides PAX Prime and PAX Dev?
PAX East.
PAX East?
There is basically a version of PAX Prime that is held on the East Coast called PAX
East. I think that's where the Prime came
from.
Because it used to just be PAX.
It used to just be PAX, but now they called it PAX Prime to differentiate it from East because there's two separate PAXes.
Oh, okay. So it's not differentiated from PAX Dev.
That's correct.
And there's nothing else other than PAX East, PAX Prime, and PAX Dev.
At the moment.
Do you see anything else in the future?
Let's see if I have any influence. There's going to be PAX
production,
too.
Double Prime?
PAX East is PAX Double Prime. So, and then PAX, when they have their one in Belarusia, that will actually be PAX East.
East.
And then PAX Double Prime will be the current PAX East, and then PAX Prime will be the current.
Assuming that Prime in this case means derivative, then
Prime means not, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Prime.
I'm thinking prime, like you know, when you're in math, you're like F prime, prime being the second derivative.
Well, that's what I was thinking, but then maybe it's just a prime cut of meat.
It could just be prime. Like, this is prime. But then again, what's an east cut of meat? That I don't know, right? But I don't think I want to eat it. Yet I've heard PAX East is delicious. So I'm confused. Again, these are questions for them, not me, because I really don't know.
I think it's I'm imagining it's more of a science fiction prime. You know, like, this is Earth Prime.
Oh, like the Metroid Prime.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so this is the biggest, baddest PAX of them all.
I think, okay. I imagine.
Well, I mean, it
because,
is.
Because
presumably, yeah.
It's not just the
PAX
biggest,
Alpha.
Baddest PAX. It's the biggest, baddest gaming convention.
Thing that there is.
Yes.
Okay.
Indeed.
All right.
Biggest, baddest thing.
Outside of Japan.
Outside of Japan.
Casey, what games have you worked on?
Games have I worked on?
Yeah.
Well,
how long have you been in the game industry?
That depends how you count it, because I work on game technology.
Oh, okay.
So if you're willing,
I see. So you've always been on the tech side. You've never
pretty much. If you're willing to count games that use that technology, I get a pretty impressive list out of it. But no, I am not. I'm not the type of person who works on specific games. So if there was a particular game that you love or hate, I am in no way responsible for anything other than perhaps like the character animation in it or the video playback or something like this.
But yet you were chosen for the development side of the conference. So that I was wondering if you had actually done design.
Well, you have to remember that this development conference is not just design. I'm talking about design mostly because you guys are designers.
Right.
But this conference has a heavy programming component to it.
Sure,
too.
But so then again, you weren't programming specific games either. You were programming tools, right? So
These are components that are core components in games, if that makes sense. So like all of the character animation in, you know, various games, like say, you know, Age of Mythology or something like that, right?
Right.
Was something that I wrote. So I'm very familiar with all of the tech stuff, and because I've worked with so many other companies since they all use the licensed technology, I'm in a good position to work with them, right? Like, so, you know, that's mostly why it's useful for me to kind of go out and be the person who talks to people about doing that sort of stuff. I don't know anything about game design. Like, zero.
So in Age of Mythology, I thought the Minotaur walked with a little hitch. Is that your fault?
That would be my fault. Okay. Probably.
That really got to me.
There's a long list of games that use character animation and stuff that I wrote, and if there are hitches in it, it was probably because I made a mistake. I'm totally willing to copy that.
So what are Richard and Scaff, people who've worked on card games and tabletop games and board games, from that angle, what sort of panels, what sort of discussions would you think would be really useful at a developer conference?
I like the part of the bar afterward where people drink and criticize each other.
And tell horror stories about other people that were at the conference.
Well, actually, I'd drill down on that, unless that was totally in jest.
Nah, it was not totally in jest.
So tell me about this. You at the bar after a conference.
Sure.
Everyone's getting a little...
Looser, yeah.
Right. And you're saying they're criticizing each other? How so?
Oh, sometimes you get... Richard's laughing.
I know that this is going.
Yeah.
It's not pretty.
Yeah.
No, I was sort of famous for getting putting my foot in my mouth and those sorts of things.
Okay.
Oh, do share.
No, no, that's all right.
But you like this part of conventions, you say.
I do. The horror stories are fun, and then sometimes, like I said, yeah, people will be able to speak a little bit more freely in these kinds of settings, and I always find it really interesting when, you know, person X, instead of saying, oh, we love this and blah, 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 and oh, that was a great game, and I really like it when people just dive in and start
rip on something,
because yeah. You, especially when the person is someone you respect as a designer, it you get a lot of insight into what they really think when they're maybe not necessarily talking to a general audience and they're saying, that game sucked because of this. And that's the sort of thing that these conferences are great for, because you go and you listen to the panels, and the panels are good. But then afterward, if you're paying attention, you can actually learn a lot more.
And sometimes they're talking about like classic games like Zork, right?
That's I've heard that has happened at one conference.
How do you feel about Zork, Scott?
When you step on a game like Zork, you make some people mad, don't you?
Yeah, I would say almost everyone in the room.
There are a lot of Zork apologists out there.
Yeah, there are a lot of Zork apologists, and there's one Zork. Slammer. That'd be me.
That would be you.
Yeah.
You have to understand, I've never heard the Zork rant. I've heard about the Zork rant from like six different people.
So how long is this podcast? Like, can we hear the Zork rant?
No. We'll just let Zork go this time, right?
Yeah, for now. We'll let Zork go.
But in the future, someday, the Zork podcast.
You know,
someday.
Zork is groundbreaking.
We can talk about text adventures.
There's a...
No, yeah.
I know why you hate it, right? Because it's narrative focused.
Narrative focused? No, it's focused on a random walk.
What do you mean?
The rant is barely contained right now.
Can you
like,
see?
Like, you can push him just a little bit more if you want, and it's coming out whether he wants it to or not.
Oh, it's so. Okay. We should do a podcast sometime on
text. How fun
adventures.
Is a freaking random walk from the center of a grid to the edge of it? Oh, except the walls are text. Great. And you can't really see them. Whip out your dictionary. That's fun.
Go north.
No, that's really fun. That's what will make games big. Yeah, that was influential on a whole generation of freaking game designers. Zork.
I know.
Yeah, great.
Never played it.
Yeah.
I do, however, know all these phrases from it, like you have been eaten by a grue.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about, do you ever play Photopia?
No, I have not. Right. Is it like Zork?
It's the polar opposite in I guess interactive fiction, if you will, land.
Opposite.
So I was
how
curious.
Am I reading and typing in words?
It is a highly constrained walk.
Uh-huh. But am I reading and typing in words?
You are reading and typing in some words where you are very clear about what they are.
Yeah.
So it's a reading. We lost you at reading.
Yeah, you lost me at reading and also typing.
All right.
Yeah, reading and typing don't. That's not.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's not fun.
You're not much of an MMO player.
Guessing the vocabulary that's intended. Yeah. Ring the bell.
But you.
I
but
don't know
no,
what
no,
you
but
mean. Hit the bell. I don't know what you mean. Slam the bell. The bell rings out in a pearly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you're saying Photopia. I don't have to figure out what words I'm trying to use.
I was merely trying to get another data point, because I picked one that happened to be in that space. Photopia is narrative focused. Zork is not. Zork is nuts and bolts puzzle solver with very little narrative in it. So I was just curious, you know, if narrative changed your mind on it or if it wasn't. Sounds like the answer is no.
And frankly, like, I like to tease Scaff, but, you know, from what I know of Zork, I'm like, it doesn't sound that interesting. Like, you know, the puzzle of, like, what do I have to do to actually get through this thing is, you know, kind of entertaining. But I've played interactive fiction games where, you know, they've come up with every possible synonym for, you know, touch, pick up, whatever.
Yeah.
The object. And if you put anything remotely having to do with that object in it, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, Zork, I've understood, is frustrating. And anybody here heard of Forum Wars?
No.
It's a browser-based...
Sounds fun.
It's awesome. It's a browser-based parody of, you know, where what you do is you go and you pwn forums by...
Awesome.
You know, you can play as an emo kid, a cam whore, a hacker, or a troll.
And who has made this game?
I don't know. It's just this little... but one of the... Most of the time you just go and you take down these forums, right? But one of the little side adventures you can do is a text adventure game called Trapped in a Cupboard.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way to get out of the first room.
Yeah, that sounds like Zork.
It's a parody of Zork, and it's hilarious. Anyway, highly recommend Forum Wars. That's Forum Wars with a Z. It is M-rated, so just be aware. But, you know, highly recommend it.
Cool. Is this podcast M-rated, or is this okay for kids?
We have a clean...
Well, until now, right? With this link to an M-rated thing, okay. Until this very instant...
Okay. I gave no link. I just mentioned...
Right. You mentioned something for people to Google. When you speak a word, right. You're giving a link in today's search engine world.
So basically, you have single-handedly dragged us down into...
No longer PG because of Jessica.
All right.
There is no PG, there is no M, there is only clean and explicit on iTunes, and we are still clean.
All right. I'll watch my mouth. I'll continue to watch my mouth.
How old is Forum Wars? Wars with a Z?
There are now 3 episodes of it. The first episode was free, and then they started charging for the second one. Yes, Scratch Zombie is the company behind it. That's
They've got my money already. Like I'm ready to buy. I will be downloading that tonight, but I'm ready to buy.
The moment that I heard that you could play as an emo kid and that your ammo was tears...
This sounds fantastic.
And your attacks are things like post-suicide notes.
How have I not heard about this?
I don't know, but it's brilliant.
It is pretty good.
It parodies the entire internet. There's nothing that it doesn't...
So anyway, so trying to elicit from people their true feelings is hard. Their true feelings about what they like are very easy to get on these panels, and their true feelings about what they hate are not easy to get. And so you're sort of... fighting with one arm tied behind your back in terms of actually learning from the wisdom of these people who've been in the industry.
So I'm just going to throw this out here because this is the only thing I can think of that would fit this. So like, would it be totally out of the question for us to have like a session basically called I Anonymous, where somebody gives their opinion of something from a cupboard with like a Vox thing on them so they can literally just say whatever the hell they wanted about a game.
Right, and here's here's the only problem with that. That's a good first step, but then you don't know who's giving the feedback.
And you
want
to know,
right? So
because you want to know whether you consider their opinion worthwhile,
exactly, and also because you know the sort of things that they do well. Like if Sid Meier is out there and he's just railing against people and whatever, and he's like, "This is stupid, that's stupid, that's stupid," and if he's talking about first-person shooters, maybe I don't care that much. But if he's talking about other strategy games, then all of a sudden it's like, oh my god, oh hey, wow, he's right. Oh, got it. Or I start to understand more. So unfortunately, the anonymity
is not okay.
You're going to get good, insightful comments, but no one's going to trust them. So that means they're worthless.
So I guess the only real thing we can probably do
is liquor up the panel beforehand.
Liquor up the panel as much as possible, which I think even the panel will be in favor of, guessing.
That's true.
Well, I wonder if you could do I wonder if you could get sort of the same thing with maybe not as much specificity, but with a, like, here is my particular genre of games that I work in, and here's, like, what not to do.
So at least you have some context for the person's...
It is. And, and that's all helpful. And you can do sample games, like if you... Again, it's hard because the conference is such a short time. And so if you gave everyone a sample game at the beginning of the conference to play for an hour, that then you deconstruct, that sort of thing is good. But you're going to say, oh, well, those lessons are a little bit harder to apply than if it's a major game that's been on the market released and everyone's played it a bunch. And then you can start tearing into it.
But what specifically from a board game, card game, tabletop, do you have anything you'd like to see? Because
besides the how?
Because that's great for any genre. That's overall, but specifically.
So specifically, what would we like to see for card and board games?
Richard doesn't want to.
So here's
Richard's only interested in talking. Yeah.
No, I mean, like I've been lured into many talks with enticing titles like that, and sometimes they have something interesting to say, sometimes not. So it's hard to, well, like I'm picturing trying to be excited about reading that description, and that would excite me, and then I would be disappointed.
So here's a question for you that's perhaps a little bit more specific about that, though, which is, because by and large, I actually feel roughly the same way you feel. A lot of times you read something and you go to the lecture and there's maybe 5 minutes of it that were what I wanted, and then it was 55 minutes of me not getting that, right?
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons that, you know, I've been pushing for let's try different stuff. So the way that I've found that a lot of these ideas come from is like, don't think conference. Think, when have you actually learned something from another designer in life, or if that has ever happened, and what kind of circumstances are those? How do we recreate more stuff like that and less stuff like people getting up and giving lectures, right? I don't know. Again, not being a game designer, I don't know how game designers best learn from each other, or how what kind of situations they work best in. One of the things we were talking about, for example, is one of the rooms we were going to set up as it's just got tons of board game design stuff in it, so that at any time during the conference, if people want to try something out, it's there and it's ready, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, we're open to anything that people think will create the kind of environment where people can learn from each other and have good ideas.
So what have you learned from other designers, Richard, directly? Anything?
Well, no, I learn from games, right?
Right.
Like, but I don't learn from designers. I learn from designers indirectly. I play a lot of games.
Interesting.
Right? When you see my walls of games there,
yes,
they're research, right?
And yeah.
I like getting them out. I like playing games that I don't even end up liking and analyzing what makes them tick and why they're, you know, what's good in them and what's not. But sitting down with people and talking about it, I don't know. That's never worked so much.
That's interesting. Okay, so you find that by the vast majority of anything you can think of where you learn something new, it was always by you playing the game and thinking about it afterwards.
Right. It's like, I mean, if I were a writer, it would be like somebody who had learned a lot by reading a lot of authors.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like I'm my opinions on game design and my game design talents come from a vacuum. I'm very open with my sources of inspiration, which there's many, many, many good games, and I make a real effort to learn not only paper and card games but also computer games,
mm-hmm,
that are not in genres which I even intend to play, like or intend to design for, like shooters and things like that, and see what differentiates them and what makes them interesting.
So would it be interesting to you, for example, if there was a curated play session by, for example, people who were experts in some genre that was very far from yours? So, for example, if there was some kind of a curated play session for first-person shooters where somebody who was an expert in that was going to go, here are some things we've set up, they're, you know, brief segments of various games that I think highlight very interesting things that people may have missed if they don't study this genre.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Is that the kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe you could do one, for example, that was that for board games. Like, here's a set of games we're going to play, you know, over the course of 2 hours or something like that. Just, you know, or even maybe one or two. And cause there are things I think that's important for you to experience as a designer that you probably wouldn't because they're not super popular, that kind of thing.
That's possible, although the time frame there may be tough. Like,
yes,
like when you're talking about like traditional card games and things like that, you know, it'll take you an hour before a lot of those games will take you an hour before you can start to feel comfortable enough to begin to understand what's going on.
You know, but one of the things that you do that might be really useful to talk to other designers about is I know that with a lot of your games, you keep track on the cover of, like, who won, like, what they were playing, like, if there are different characters or if they're different.
Sure.
So it might be sort of interesting for the games in which you have a lot of data there to, like, have people play that game, talk about it, and then be like, by the way, because I know that you also make an effort to play with a lot of different people from a lot of different walks of life who might not be particularly
sure.
well represented.
Sure.
Well, right. And so there's a couple of interesting things there. First of all, it's hard to ask Richard because in particular, he's one of the top people in his field. So it's a lot harder for him to learn from other people than it is for other people. There's a little bit of that weirdness going on. And I think maybe you did learn at some point. I don't know. You probably didn't have a class in, you know, fifth grade as a game design class. But like, for instance, for a writer, writers probably do actually learn directly, not from reading, but probably most of that takes place really early in their life. And then after some point, they're getting
a
lot of...
It's similar in that you learn the most just from reading.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying if you look at the people you actually learn from directly and not from reading, obviously you learn most from reading, and obviously you're going to learn most from playing the games. But if you learn things from other people, it's probably earlier rather than later. Because that's at the time when you haven't read a whole lot yet. So the chances that you're actually getting new information from someone directly are much higher early than they are late.
I think one of the things you'll find about most professional writers is that almost across the board, they started reading voraciously at an early age. And I mean, the sort of stuff they teach you in school, mm-hmm.
Doesn't
end up affecting. Mm. I mean, what they teach you about writing in school is so basic that it doesn't really end up affecting you as, you know, a professional writer. I wouldn't trust a writer that doesn't read a lot. It sounds like as a game designer, you'd be suspicious of a game designer that doesn't play a lot of games.
I'm very suspicious. And I actually, there's quite a number who don't play a lot of games. And in fact, I'm contributing a chapter to a book on game design, and my chapter is going to be Play a Lot of Games, Damn It. And, but there are some designers who disagree with me, and they don't play games because they don't want to be influenced by other people's designs. But for me, that's putting them first as designers. It's about them. Whereas if it's about the game, then they should read other people's designs because that's how you're going to make the best game.
There's actually a funny article on Cracked called something like five things that you think are ruining movies that have been around forever or something like that. And they were... One of those things was adaptations, sequels, copying plots that have already been done before. And they pointed out that throughout history, you know, every great writer, most great artists all steal from other people. You know, Shakespeare wrote like four plays where we can't immediately point to something that he was adapting.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it seems the idea that you're going to be able to generate all the ideas that you need to yourself without... inspiration from other people seems naive,
yeah.
At best,
no, that's certainly my opinion.
Egotistical at worst.
I think it's much better for games to draw from a lot of sources and be open with your inspiration.
So we said it would be great if this is sort of summarize. It'd be great if there were a way to get real criticism,
which is interesting, and that's definitely something to think about. Obviously, we can provide and are going to be providing the space around the convention, like all of the sort of things that aren't rooms in which something is happening right away, are set up for people to talk with each other. There's just a huge amount of space devoted to that. So we can get some of that personally, but in terms of how to get a structured way of getting that criticism, that's a really interesting problem. Alcohol may be
the
solution.
There's another possible solution.
We need a new sponsor.
Just before you give your other possible solution, even Richard's curated play session seems like a, you know, if you're sitting around a table with a bunch of designers playing a game, people are going to say things like, yeah, that's...
They might be more open. Yeah, that's true.
The other possibility is if you get the designer of the game to specifically lead the discussion on the criticism of their game, people will
kind of rip it
open.
Himself, kind of a thing.
Well, not necessarily himself, right? But like, if you feel like if he says, "Okay, take your best shot,"
you know, that'd be fun. Is do a game roast?
I was just
it's like
thinking.
Honoring the game, but at the same time, just cutting it off,
mocking
it.
The
right.
And, I mean, like,
GTA
that's
could
very
certainly stand to some roasting, right?
Sure, like all the stupid stuff in it. Yeah, and the thing is that would work. Yeah. I think it would work much better if the designer were there, if the lead designer were there.
Yeah. And if
he were in good.
Sure.
Yeah, because then you don't have to worry about...
If he kind of gave you permission, is basically what you're saying.
Exactly. Like,
you have permission for an hour to rip on my game, and I'm swimming in a pool of money out back anyway, so like it doesn't matter.
You do it with successful games.
And and whatever said, the designer would be hearing firsthand, so you don't have to worry about, you know, Meyer talking to somebody and being like, oh, well, you know, PAX Dev, Richard Garfield said this about your game.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like in fact, you could.
I like it. That sounds great.
Yeah, like a series of those kind of things. You could even do, you know, two or three different ones if you could.
Yeah,
get the designers
depending
to sign
on how
up.
Many designers would be willing to.
Yeah, just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think maybe if you only did one from each genre.
Right, like, you could kind
because
of
I feel like if you did like two FPSs in a row, right, and so the first one goes on, and then that designer comes down and is all burning.
It's bitter.
And so,
yeah,
it's like, right. Well.
That's not so good.
Yeah. No, perhaps. Game roast. That's great.
I mean, you could also have the premise that, like, any game can be roasted, mm-hmm. right? Everything has some things you can point at, and so
yeah.
And you pick on the successful ones.
Yeah, pick on the most popular ones.
Laughing my way to the bank or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
For the curated game sessions, what you might do, one of the things is if you set up a room filled with games, one of the problems is that people's natural inclination is to go to the games they know and play those. But if you had game sessions which were specifically set up to take people out of their comfort zone.
I like that.
And so you have these designers come in and play Bunko or something they just don't usually play and maybe somebody who's leading it in the case of more complicated games or any game, I guess.
Yeah, I like all of these, actually.
Oh, good.
All right.
So what else?
Not everyone at this conference is going to be a top dog, obviously, right? And so there's a question of what kind of content is good for newer designers. You're saying that there's a lot of things that you think about how game design should be done. Do you have any ideas along the lines of like, okay, so for the less experienced people, what's a good thing? What kind of content should, if you take some greener folks and you want them someday to design games that aren't crap, what do we start with? What do we do for tabletop?
We just wrote a textbook.
We did.
That
seriously?
So what you do is you go out and buy their textbook.
Yeah, now would be a really good time to plug that.
Buy the damn book. Well, except the book's not out yet. The book is called Characteristics of Games through MIT Press, and it will come out about a year from now.
Can you pre-order it on Amazon yet?
In 9 months or something like that, yeah.
Can you pre-order it?
Can you sign up on Amazon?
You can pre-order it through us.
Here's an address. Just leave this money in a mailbox.
Just send some money I don't believe you can. Although actually you could contact MIT Press and ask them about it, and that will only help the book come out sooner. So
I didn't realize there's such a huge lead time. That's
and
impressive.
So are flying monkeys.
Well, what happens is I believe there's these release windows, and we were supposed to release around now and we missed it.
Okay.
For various reasons.
So now you are in a different window.
Yeah, we are now in a different window. Crash into windows.
That was you.
That's us.
And you're waiting for it to open again. We're all like stunned.
We're trying
on
to see if we're going to revive ourselves or not.
There's some preprints floating out around there. I think. Where does Eric Zimmerman teach? He uses it at. Where is he?
I was at NYU.
NYU. Yeah. So there's some preprints floating around. And we taught a course at University of Washington for a while that used large chunks of it and made sort of early copies of the chapters available to the students there. So there's stuff out about it. It got a lot more polished through the process of actually writing it. So because there were editors and stuff.
I was so offended when they added editors to this project.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Almost walked out, right? Just like, I've had it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I hate editors.
Yeah, anyway. I don't like my spell checker either.
Yeah. It sucks. It's
it's constantly taunting with that little red line.
Yeah. It stifles my creativity.
Damn you, red line.
Yeah.
Right click, add to dictionary every time.
Anyway, so
it's a word if I say it's a word. And not before.
So that's one thing is read the book or take our courses.
So the thrust of the book is it's trying to establish there's this idea that when you get into college and you decide to take a film course, you've already have this you've already got 12 years of education in various aspects of storytelling.
Yes.
But when you try to get into games, you've got no formal education in games.
Right.
And so the book is focused on really basic stuff, like just talking about what the different aspects of games there are and trying to establish a vocabulary for them. And we also try to tie together a really wide variety of games. So, for instance, the beginning characteristics we talk about are really simple. They're things like the number of players and how long the game takes.
Okay.
And there are different implications to your game if it has two people or two sides of two teams or three or more people or 13 people or one person. All these things have effects on the games. And so then once we start talking about those effects, we tie it into paper games, board and card games, computer games, sports, game shows.
I see.
And try to keep games as this one large family rather than what is usually treated as, which is as people are just interested in trading card games or interested in first-person shooters or something like that.
Well, it sounds like you guys would be perfect for for suggestions on what to do for introductory content then.
Yeah, well, we would have things to say because basically first of all, the high level idea, which ties back to this idea of play a lot of games, damn it, is look at all the games and they all have relevance to whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
And if it's not fun to you, you should probably try playing it again and at the make it fun, or at the very least try to figure out why other people think it's fun, because
I see.
Because that's sort of your professional responsibility.
Yeah.
You should know what makes those things tick. And then any one of the chapters is something which is worth people thinking about.
Yeah.
I just gave a talk at NYU on luck in games. And what I talked about there was what the role of luck is in games, how it can manifest itself, and how professional game designers ought to use it or not use it.
So it sounds like basically what we would want is some concurrently running thing all day where you guys go through the various chapters of this book, basically, since no one can get a copy of it yet.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, also, any one of the topics in the book, though, if you just had the chapter headers, right, you could do things like run panels where, like, you talk about luck in games, for example.
Yeah.
You could have a panel with people and they could talk about it, and we wouldn't have to be there. They would, if they were a responsible and broad panel, they would come up with a lot of the material, which we did.
And the people that were on the panel would be randomly chosen.
Yeah, just to demonstrate the effects of luck.
Exactly.
Well, I'm assuming, though, that they wouldn't be randomly chosen, because I'm assuming that they would only be partially randomly chosen for optimal game design.
That's probably true. Yeah, yeah.
Randomly chosen with some kind of bias.
I would probably actually make it so that you wouldn't know that you weren't going to be on the panel until very late. Like, there's always this chance you could get back in because you don't want to be eliminated from contention. And so at any point, you might be called up.
I don't think this has necessarily any content implication for the conference, but I like the idea of a panel where the goal is to be on the panel at the end of the day, but there's some very highly structured set of arbitrary rules that involve who can be on the panel, kind of like what you're saying here.
Yeah.
And so maybe this panel is only like 10 minutes long, and it doesn't really have a topic other than awesome people is like the topic of the panel,
so
right? And everyone wants to be on that panel.
So it's the equivalent of, wasn't there a metagame?
The Omegathon.
The Omegathon, right.
It'd be the
Omega
panel.
The PAX Dev version.
Yeah.
Right, and
yeah.
So it's a popularity contest. After each panel,
perhaps,
people can vote on the speakers.
Oh, my goodness. It's like Survivor for panels.
For panelists.
Yeah, I just posted the rules to this game on our website, called 11 Plus, which is you play the simple NIM game, and every time you finish it, you add a rule to it. So you could have your panel run in that sort of way, where what happens is there's four seats on the panel, and there's some rules, and they have to keep on iterating those rules, and every minute or so, the audience makes new rules
that they have to follow.
When people fail to follow rules, then they get thrown off the panel.
Somebody
else goes up, and so the structure would get more and more innate until it collapsed under its own weight.
And there just simply couldn't be a panel anymore, so it ended. All right.
I like
I think we'll have to figure out a way to do this. We'll have to work this in somehow.
And that definitely should involve alcohol.
Yes.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably true.
Oh, yeah. So one scheduling thing, like for your game roast and probably for this nonsense that you're talking about, later you schedule it,
the better,
and with a break, you know, a dinner/bar break.
Right. So you basically have it so that people can get loaded
Yes.
Come to a panel.
You could even call them after happy hour panels.
Okay. That actually is a really good idea.
Yeah, I mean, and literally,
that is a very good idea.
Yeah, literally call them after happy hour panels.
Yeah, instead of AM and PM, you'd have like...
Like before happy hour and after.
AH and PH. Or,
yeah.
Yep.
In the evening, you could just have drunk game designer conferences or panels. And so then you have like the drunk Sid Meier thing, and you just make sure to get him to get his drink on. You could have the...
Drinking contest, then panel.
Then panel.
One other very tactical suggestion is is if you went to local bars around the area and said, oh, hey, if you give people that show their badge $1 off a beer, we will put your name on the list of bars doing the happy hour panel, right? So they go in, you get $1 off a beer or whatever, and then those three or four bars are listed, so all the people go over there and drink. So everybody, it's a win-win. Everybody
wins.
Right,
so you are definitely tactically setting this up for maximum amount of inebriated paneling.
Inebriated, I like honest the way you're, paneling.
I have no problem with that. Yeah. I'm not against this plan. I'm just saying it's very cunning.
Right?
Yeah. I just, run it by your lawyers first. And I did not suggest this except in jest.
If anything were to happen, it would be in no way because of your suggestion, certainly.
Right. Because my suggestion was purely in jest.
It is a Kirk reports. And my agreement with that was also purely in jest.
Yeah. So anyway, but that might be a good idea.
Should we say instead of in jest, perhaps in vibe?
That's right.
Shall we say? Yeah.
So, because that's the main thing. Like, I noticed at GDC, the main reason to go to GDC is actually free, just free alcohol, because you go to GDC and you go afterward, you can kind of wander, even if you never went to the conference, you can sort of wander these hotels afterward and all the little conference rooms. There's all these sponsored sessions and they're just pouring.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it's pretty clear that the bums in San Francisco have not quite figured this out yet.
Yes. That's going to be the ant trail from hell. When one dude makes it in there, it is over.
It
is just full on over.
Yeah, back to San Jose.
Yep.
Yeah. That's right.
Now that we have solved every problem that anyone has ever struggled with in how to put together a game design.
To get into
finally and totally.
A game design conference. We will bid you good night. Thank you so much for joining us, Casey.
Thank you for having me.
Game developer listeners, plan to attend PAX Dev, and everybody else, plan to attend PAX Prime, because both of them will be awesome. And next week, we will talk about a very exciting Spectrumancer expansion called Truth and Beauty, and that is at www.spectrumancer.com. Would you like to repeat it, Scott?
What was that?
Repeat what? Repeat www.spectrumancer.com? I think our listeners know by now they're not idiots.
Know what?
That it's at www.spectrumancer.com.
Oh, yeah, that. Yeah.
Since I'm actually new to this podcast, I'm sorry, I'm not sure what you mean by this. Like, if I go to www.spectrumancer.com, I'll be able to, like, look at this game or download it, for example?
Absolutely. More than just look at it. You can play it for free.
If you go to www.spectrumancer.com, you'll be able to download a free version and have a lot of fun.
Well, I know what I'm doing after the podcast.
On that note, we'll bid you good night. This is Jessica Price signing off.
Good night for Scaffy Elias.
Good night for Richard Garfield.
And good night for Casey Muratori.